Today's episode of Dog Nation Daily is brought to you by Engineered Solutions of Georgia. Dial 678-ESOG now for a solution to your foundation and waterproofing problems.
Presented by DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
One of the things that I try not to do very much is talk about some of the perks that come from being a member of the Coastal Elite Broadcast Media. That's really true for two reasons. First of all, there aren't that many perks, to be completely honest with you. And for the few perks that might exist, you really don't care about those. Those don't impact your life. So therefore, there's really no point in bringing that up on this show. However, by way of making a point, let me just say this. One of the things that makes me different than some other people is, you know, the last couple of years, not this past season, but the two seasons before that, Georgia finished its season by going to the Sugar Bowl. And I got to tell you, I really like the Sugar Bowl. You know, I think the hospitality there in New Orleans is amazing. Obviously, the food's great. I think the Sugar Bowl committee really rolls at the red carpet. You know, it may be maybe just a half tick below what like the Rose Bowl is famous for, but it's like really, really nice. And when Georgia went back to the Sugar Bowl for a second consecutive year in 2019, it was almost like it was the punchline of a joke. Ah, ha, ha, Georgia back in the Sugar Bowl again. Ha, ha, ha. And I remember thinking, well, if this is as bad as my life gets, my favorite team playing in the Sugar Bowl for a second consecutive year, if this is as bad as things get, if that's the thing that people bring up by way of mocking me, the team that I cover, and I use cover in air quotes, the team that I follow, if this is as bad as it gets, then life is really not all of that, you know, bad. Same thing, by the way, also being in the Peach Bowl this past year as well. You know, when you're kind of in that level of not quite college football playoff, but your bowl game is still played at beautiful palace like Mercedes-Benz Stadium, you know, life is pretty good. And, you know, the reason why I bring all that up is because Georgia has kind of been, and I'll use air quotes again here, kind of stuck in that position of being fifth best team in the country. And this is where I don't think perception really matches up with reality very well, because the perception is that the most disappointing team in the country, the most disappointed group of fans in the country in a year is that team who kind of finishes fifth best, just outside the college football playoff. And when it's been Georgia, you know, kind of more than 1 year here during this playoff era, it just kind of becomes easy to sort of mock Georgia for all of that. But much the same way I said, hey, listen, if it's as bad as life gets to be in the Sugar Bowl for a couple of years, go into the Peach Bowl, if this is as bad as things are going to get, then frankly, I think all of us are kind of living a pretty charmed existence. And I would also add to this that in Georgia's ultimate pursuit of winning a national championship, it may seem not great to be fifth best, because in our current world, there are only four playoff teams. And, you know, Georgia, through sometimes its own doing, maybe sometimes through the evaluation of the committee one way or another, has kind of had that door closed in its face of being in the top four after the 2017 season when it did get in the college football playoff and almost won the national championship. And kind of all of this kind of leads to this general sense of frustration of, you know, why is Georgia always so close, just kind of knocking on the door here and not quite getting through. Now, I'll tell you what brings all this to mind for me. A good writer from ESPN, his name is David Hale, had a very interesting piece, and we're going to talk more about this in more detail about the, you know, the full list, you know, kind of later on in the show. But he kind of looked at all the teams potentially competing for the national championship, and they put them into tiers. And Georgia kind of gets top tier status along with the obvious teams that you know, teams like, you know, LSU, which has won a title, Alabama, which has won a title, Clemson, which has won a bunch of titles, Ohio State, which has a college football playoff title going back 2014. You know, those truly elite teams who have hoisted national championship trophies, they've got the hardware to prove their status. And also in that group is Georgia, who is kind of come up just short. And Hale wrote something interesting about UGA. Let me read this to you here very briefly. This is what David Hale said about Georgia. He says, the wild card in the bunch is Georgia, David Hale says, which holds the fifth best record of any Power 5 program during the playoff era, a winning percentage of 783. The other playoff, kind of top tier teams all had that 80% or better mark. Georgia just below the 80% mark at winning 78.3% of its games during the playoff era. And then David Hale goes on to say this: Georgia returns a roster that screams, quote, now or never for Kirby Smart. Boy, I think that's really interesting that this could be a now or never situation for Kirby Smart and UGA. I'll get to that in a moment. Let me just kind of close the book, though, on what I was saying a moment ago. Georgia fans have lived through what David Hale just described there. The idea that you're fifth best, you're just behind Alabama, you're just behind Clemson. It's what makes this year's season opener versus Clemson so important. You know, you failed in your comparison to LSU back in 2019. Obviously, Ohio State has kind of been a fixture in some of these kind of conversations as well. And it almost becomes the kind of thing that Georgia gets mocked for. The one team in the supposedly elite category of college football that doesn't have a national championship to show for its efforts thus far during this modern era in which we live. But I'll say this one more time. It's not a bad thing. It's a good thing. Because frankly, if you're not in that category, you really have very little chance of winning a title whatsoever. We obviously live in an age in which fewer teams than ever before have any legitimate chance at winning a national championship. There are plenty of teams in the SEC, by the way, that have almost no chance of winning a national championship. Certainly an overwhelming majority of other Power Five programs can view a national championship as no more than a distant pipe dream. The same way we might view, you know, winning the lottery or something like that. There are some teams around the country in the major Power Five level of college football for whom a national championship is no more than just an impossible fantasy. But the fact that Georgia gets to be in that elite category, even if it's the team that seemingly has less credentials in comparison to the other teams in that group, the fact that Georgia is there is a good thing, much the same way that we've kind of enjoyed some of these other major bowls that have quite not been, you know, college football playoff status. The fact that Georgia stays connected to this elite group of teams gives it a better chance of eventually breaking through, and I think eventually it will, which brings me to the second thing that David Hale says there, the notion that 2021 is a now or never year for Georgia. The media, and this is, by the way, not a criticism of Hale in particular, because I think he's a pretty good writer, at least to the extent that I don't know him personally, but what I've read from him over the years, I would say that he's a pretty good writer. But the point here is that the media loves the notion of put up or shut up, now or never. If you're not getting it done this year, when is it ever going to happen? That kind of becomes the great fodder for hot takes. And obviously, I think that 2021 is an incredibly important year for Georgia, because you can certainly make a case that there won't be very many years in the future where Georgia obviously has it set up better for them, at least seemingly, than it does right now, with the talent that Georgia returns, the schedule that it's slated to play. You know, you got a couple tough games in there, but it's not a schedule filled with landmines. John Stinchcomb and I talked about that on yesterday's show. So this is a great chance for Georgia to win the title, but it is not a put up or shut up year, or whatever it was that David Hale said, now or never type of year. It's just not that kind of thing. And when people kind of bring that up for Georgia, we are going to push back against that on this show. We're not going to let that narrative to kind of, you know, set in here that somehow the pressure is so big on Georgia that it's championship or bust. Because frankly, we think that Georgia's window is open for a good number of years. We're a long way away from having to talk about any kind of potential the or bust part of the championship or bust, part of this equation. Long way from getting there. And as a way of kind of, you know, furthering this point and cementing this point, let's think about the NFL for a moment. You know, the NFL this weekend is going to host its Super Bowl, and the Super Bowl is going to feature the Kansas City Chiefs and the Tampa Bay Bucks. Now, a lot of interest will be on the Bucks because it's 43-year-old Tom Brady playing in his 10th Super Bowl. You know, he's kind of been the golden child of the NFL, and he's back there again with a new team, and that's obviously the big dominant storyline. And if you're not thinking about Tom Brady, you're probably thinking about Patrick Mahomes, who is kind of maybe on his way to having a Tom Brady-like career, and he's in the early stages of that right there. But for me, the most interesting figure in this game on Sunday isn't Mahomes, and it's not Brady. The most interesting figure for me is Kansas City Chiefs coach Andy Reid, because around the whole notion of it's championship or bust, it's now or never, it's put up or shut up, you know, Reid is one of those guys that has had that narrative thrown at him over and over and over again. For those of you that follow the NFL, you remember his time in Philadelphia when he lost all those NFC championship games, the game right before the Super Bowl. He lost that one many years in a row. I remember a loss to the Bucks. I remember a loss to the Rams. I think there was a loss to the Panthers in there. There was a lot of, you know, he did make one Super Bowl, happened to beat the Falcons. But other than that, there are a lot of these NFC championship game losses where the Eagles seemed so close to winning a championship and they came up short. And a lot of people decided, well, this just must mean that Andy Reid's a regular season coach. He's not a Super Bowl winning coach. He's the kind of guy that can get it done in the regular season, but when you get to the big game, this is the, you know, phrase that sports, you know, talk radio and shows like this have been throwing out for decades. Andy Reid's the kind of guy who can't win the big one. His time in Philadelphia kind of proves that. Well, last year, he changed his narrative forever by winning a Super Bowl title with the Kansas City Chiefs. And I thought it was kind of cool in the postgame press conference last year, after Reed and the Chiefs had won, the notion of what had happened in Philadelphia for him and all the times that he came up short and all the times that those moments seemed to be establishing the narrative of what Reed was and wasn't as a coach. In the postgame press conference, after winning the Super Bowl last year, Kansas City Chiefs coach Andy Reed talked about that a little bit. Listen to this.
I loved my time in Philadelphia. Phenomenal players there. We were so close. I mean, you know, so many times. And I mean, my heart went out to those guys. There's one thing that hurt. It was for the Lurys and the players. So this is a pure team effort. So I'm happy for them. They have a little piece of all of this. I mean, and then for the Eagles to do what they did a couple years back with Doug. And so, I mean, that's a special city. And they've had some great players there.
So Reed changed his narrative forever by winning a Super Bowl a year ago. And at that time, Reed foreshadowed what would happen for him now a year later, with a chance to now double up his number of Super Bowls, hold a second Lombardi trophy. Reed actually predicted a year ago that we'd be sitting here talking about what we are right now. This is Andy Reed again.
I'm really excited. I mean, about it. You know, you want to go get it. You get one, you want to go get another one. But we got to backpedal for about a minute here and enjoy this one, and then we'll get busy on the next one.
So listen, the point that I'm attempting to make here ought to be obvious. It's easy to put Georgia in a category right now of the one supposedly elite college football team that can't get it done, that's fifth best in the country and relegated to Sugar Bowls and Peach Bowls while everybody else is playing in the college football playoff. And that has been true. And Georgia fans, more so than anybody else, are willing to acknowledge with the long-term past, the last 40 years, and the recent past, what's happened for this program, you know, in the Kirby Smart era. Georgia fans are willing to acknowledge the truth of that past. But it's also, be honest here, that narratives have a way of changing. Andy Reid was once the coach that can't win the big one. And after Sunday, he may be a coach that's won two Super Bowls, which puts him in a rarefied air when it comes to all-time history. And the same path could be traveled by Georgia. In fact, if it was traveled by Georgia, and if it was traveled by Kirby Smart in particular, it wouldn't even be that surprising. Georgia's already in, to use David Hale's phrasing here, the top tier of college football. The national championships just haven't come yet. Well, being in that top tier gives them a chance to come. In the next few years, we may see some of that, much like it has been for Andy Reid, start to come to pass. My name's Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans, presented today by Engineered Solutions of Georgia. Good to have you with us, no matter how you get to us today. Live on video, 10 a.m., Facebook, YouTube, Twitter. Got a sweater on today. It's cold outside, but I hope you're curling up wherever you are and enjoying the program here today. And we really appreciate Engineered Solutions of Georgia making it all possible. Let me also give a shout-out here today, our buddy Connor Riley helping us out with this. We are attempting a maiden voyage on Twitch today, so we'll see how that goes. We're not going to spike the football on adding a new video platform until we actually see it actually come to pass, so we'll see how that goes down here in just a little bit, but it could be in the days ahead. You may get a chance to start enjoying our program every day on Twitch, so shout out to the gamers over there, and we will let you see Dog Nation Daily presented by ESOG over there as well. And by the way, more platforms to come as our show continues to grow in all ways and all bounds each and every day. Really appreciate that. All right, let me say thanks to Engineered Solutions of Georgia for making it all possible, because all the resources that we have to do all of this would not simply exist if it wasn't for the kindness of our friends like ESOG. Of course, you know Engineered Solutions of Georgia. They are also a proud partner of UGA, which makes them really fun to do business with. It's good to support companies that also support the dogs. That's what Engineered Solutions of Georgia does. They want to help you when it comes to your foundation, your waterproofing issues. These are really, really important things to think about. It's the kind of thing that can certainly cause some angst for homeowners, because when you have that rain coming through, you know, you see the evidence of it. Sometimes you'll see those wet spots in the basement. Sometimes it's more than just a spot, let's face it. Sometimes a lot of us have gone down in our basement and seen water show up and we're panicked. We're not sure what to do. Well, your thing to do is to trust my friends and Engineered Solutions of Georgia, because they're going to take really, really good care of you. They got two full-time engineers on staff. They will will get you set up and running again for any of those foundation issues. You see those cracks show up in the foundation or evidence of water intrusion. Engineered Solutions of Georgia is the source you want to trust for all of that. Simply give them a call. It's 678-ESOG now. Very easy number to remember. Just dial 678-ESOG now. That will get you in touch with Engineered Solutions of Georgia. We're going to get Mike Griffith here coming up in a moment. It's not normally Mike's day on Tuesday, but we're going to kind of shift things around a little bit. Connor Riley will join us live on Wednesday show. Mike today. We'll talk a little bit about what he wrote about Rick Gilbert on our program coming up in just a minute. Before that, though, let's go around the doghouse. And I want to deal with some recruiting stuff here for a moment. To start off with, we are just one day away from a pretty big decision from the perspective of Georgia fans and the final piece maybe of the class of 2021. Defensive back Terrion Arnold will make his choice tomorrow. The top three has kind of been Georgia, Alabama, and Florida. Jeff Sintel, though, our Dog Nation recruiting insider, when he joined us on Friday's show, said really maybe now it's Florida taking a backseat in Arnold's recruitment, and the actual choice for Arnold when he announces it on Wednesday might actually be down to just two schools. The Dog's one of those. This is Jeff from Friday.
I think it's really Georgia and Alabama for Terrion Arnold, and you've got to see Terrion looking at this thing and going, Alabama is Alabama. He's probably very likely, if you spend 3 years at Alabama, to play in a national championship game and probably win one. But then he might have to wait a year, even as talented as he is, he might have to wait at least a year before he plays because Alabama's bringing back most of its defense. For Georgia, I mean, it is wide open country. I mean, I think if Terrion Arnold chose Georgia, I think he will immediately come into the room as no worse than the fourth most talented defensive back in the program.
So I think that's a pretty good distillation from Jeff of why a guy like that goes to Alabama. We saw, and we played the audio for you, of the leaked recruiting pitch from Nick Saban the other day that, you know, you go to Alabama because of the prestige of the program, the number of championships that it's won. And you can imagine for someone like Terrion Arnold, that might be a pretty significant sway. In the case of Georgia, a program that's also had great success with its defensive backs, but now maybe a wide open opportunity for playing time. You could easily see someone like Arnold being, you know, swayed by that as well. Doing a little research on this the last, you know, few hours or so, saw a couple things on YouTube that I thought were kind of interesting. There was a Rivals reporter that did a YouTube interview with Arnold here in the last day or so, and Arnold has said that he has now made up his mind. Obviously didn't announce what it's going to be, but of that top three that Jeff says really more of a top two between Georgia and Alabama, Arnold told Rivals.com in a YouTube video, and I'll put a link to this when I post the show later on, that that he has kind of made his final choice. And the thing that he says was instrumental in that choice is the relationship that he has with the coaching staff of the school. And obviously, you're a Georgia fan, you would say, well, gosh, that gives Georgia reason to feel good, because how many times on this show have we chronicled all the things that Arnold has said about Kirby Smart, the close bond that he felt with him, and even in the, you know, kind of transition to a new defensive backs coach on this show based on some of the things that Jeff Sintel had told us. We said, hey, maybe not that much to worry about there, because Smart and Arnold have always been so closely connected. But then I saw another interview that Arnold did with you familiar with Touchdown Alabama magazine? It's a media outlet that covers the Crimson Tide. And Arnold was saying to them a few months ago some of the same stuff about Nick Saban that we've also heard him saying about Kirby Smart, that he and Saban have had those FaceTime calls together, and he and Saban have had that opportunity to connect with each other individually in a very similar fashion to the way that Arnold has connected with Kirby Smart. Now, I'm not going to pretend to know if he feels closer to Saban than he does to Smart, but it is interesting to know that Alabama is apparently selling to Arnold more than just the prestige of the program. There's also a little bit of a personal bond that Arnold has formed with the head coach of the Crimson Tide as well. So if you want evidence that Arnold's a big-time player, that, you know, kind of a lead voice in his recruitment for Georgia has been Smart, and on the Alabama side, it seems like Nick Saban's been pretty involved in all of this too. Let me also squeeze this in, very late here as part of Around the Doghouse before we get Mike Griffith coming up in a moment, that tomorrow will not only be a big day for the class of 2021 with what goes down with Terrion Arnold, but also a look at the class of 2022 as well with Bear Alexander, a very impressive defensive tackle prospect out of the state of Texas. This is one of the top defensive tackles in the country, one of the top 25 or so prospects in the entire state of Texas. This is a pretty big deal, and he's announcing his commitment on Twitter. He says on Twitter that Wednesday, February 3rd, it all ends. And he's got kind of a cool bear logo there. This has been kind of an interesting recruitment to follow, especially, you know, by way of, like, say, like Texas A&M message boards, things like that, watching Georgia come in here, and it seems like Georgia has, and made a big impact on Alexander. You know, not quite sure yet how this one's going to go down, but it seems like Georgia's very much a part of the Alexander recruitment here, which, by the way, is another example of Trey Scott doing big-time work on the recruiting trail to even be in this discussion to the extent that Georgia is. Scott's really making a name for himself as a defensive line recruiter, and this big, big guy, you know, potentially the someone who could kind of fall in the footsteps of a Georgia Jordan Davis, or, you know, a player kind of in that mold. In addition to a big day for the class of 2021 with what Terrion Arnold's going to do, following and seeing what Bear Alexander does as well is also going to be a very, very big deal. It's good to have you with us here today on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Engineered Solutions of Georgia. Before we're done, I think a very funny golden shoe winner, we'll give one of those out as a part of our Gator Hater roll call before it's all said and done, but very busy around UGA right now. Let me kind of do all of what's going on in the program, including a pretty provocative piece on Rick Gilbert. Let's talk to Mike Griffith here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by ESOG.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
So, Mike, you had a pretty interesting piece on Rick Gilbert choosing Florida. It's kind of gotten some chatter here the last day or so. I do want to talk to you about that before we're done with our conversation here. Let me, though, begin with you, kind of where I was discussing off the top of the program here today. Listen, I'll acknowledge as much as anyone about what Georgia has not done over the 40 years of my lifetime in the recent years under Kirby Smart. You know, Georgia fans are more acquainted than anyone with the kind of close but no cigar nature of the program. And I am, like everybody else, in looking at 2021 as the kind of season where that has a chance to change. Everyone will acknowledge that Georgia is on the shortest of short lists for national championship contention, things like that. But the one statement I'm not willing to make, because I don't think it should be made, is the idea that this is a championship or bust, make or break, as the ESPN writer that I quoted a moment ago said, now or never. That's not what the stakes are for Georgia this season. I don't see the championship window closing within the next few years. And in fact, I could see Georgia, as I said before, traveling a similar path to what Andy Reid, the Kansas City Chiefs, have traveled, if, you know, you can kind of stay the course with all of that. Where do you come down on the notion of now or never for Georgia in 2021?
Well, I can see where someone on the outside might say that. And I have a tendency to lean there, just, you know, thinking that maybe this is JT Daniels' final year at Georgia, and I just don't know enough about Brock or Gunner or Carson to say that the next guy will be as talented. Certainly, we saw what happened when Jake Fromm moved on, and there wasn't a capable, experienced guy waiting in the wings immediately. So I can sort of see that, but I'll say this. Every time people try to bury Kirby Smart, you know, they throw a shovel full of dirt on him, he throws it back off. You know, Sam Pittman left the staff, DA, and I thought Pittman for about 24 hours was irreplaceable. I go back to that moment walking out of Mercedes-Benz Stadium after LSU just waylaid Georgia. Of course, DeAndre Swift didn't play. Pickens was suspended for the first half. You know, JRE, you know, Tyler Simmons drops a touchdown pass on the first play of the game. I mean, they're just, you know, Georgia was its own worst enemy. But and then Pittman's gone, and I'm thinking to myself, when will Georgia be back in this building? Well, they didn't make it back last year, as it turned out. You know, things happened. Players got injured. But Matt Luke came on board. And then Todd Monken came on board. And JT Daniels transferred in. And you see players emerge. Arian Smith. Everybody can't wait to see Arian Smith. This guy is lightning. Darnell Washington. Lewis Seen. You know, Jordan Davis. You know, guy after guy after. You know, so while the answers may not be evident, I think at this point, from a talent and coaching staff standpoint, I think Kirby Smart's earned trust. Now, we all know he hasn't beat Alabama, but he has led at halftime of all three games. That tells me he's knocking on the door, Brandon. So I'm with you. I'm not ready to say championship or bust. I think it probably requires a little blind faith to suggest that 2022 will be as promising as 2021. But so far,
are, Kirby keeps coming up with answers, it seems like, to keep his team in contention.
Yeah, I think what's interesting here is how I would approach this as kind of like a media type person, and how I hope that Georgia approaches this internally, because, you know, as a media type person, just looking at the numbers and just kind of looking at, you know, Georgia in comparison to the rest of the country, I don't know what Georgia will be ranked preseason in 2022, but my assumption is it's probably going to be pretty high. And I'd say the same thing about 2025 or 2029 or, you know, whatever else. If we assume that college football has a similar shape the way that it is right now, you know, you kind of think Georgia will be kind of knocking on the door of kind of the same level that it is right now. But that's not what I hope that Georgia internally views this season. I hope that Georgia internally views this like the old, you know, phrase we'd say sometimes in baseball. You like, you have Johnny Holstaff pitching for you. You know, you kind of just throw everything you have out there, kitchen sink, whatever else, to make sure you get it done this year, which means that, you know, you try to hire a defensive backs coach that's got some experience. You try to add every single player that you can that could even make any kind of contribution to what you're able to do. It's one thing for me as kind of a media type person to say, I plan on talking about Georgia as a championship contender over the course of the long haul, over the course of the next few years. But, you know, you certainly hope as a fan of the program, if you are, that Georgia approaches this particular season with the sense of urgency that it's worth, because given the schedule that Georgia plays, given what Georgia does bring back, you know, given Georgia's, you know, relative comparison to the rest of the top teams in the country, this is certainly a very good opportunity to go out and win a championship, even if it's not the last opportunity that Smart and the Dogs are going to have.
Yeah, and I think you can make that assumption, Brandon. I mean, listen, for the fans, it's Georgia. It's the same Georgia every year. But for the players, it's their time. It's their time as leaders. It's Jordan Davis' time as a senior. It's JT Daniels' time, you know, as a redshirt junior. It's George Pickens' contract year, right? I think we all know Georgia will go pro after this next season. You know, these players, they don't look to the, and the coaches don't either. You know, Kirby Smart, he'll tell you, hey, you're not getting a raise. There were two guys, Cortez Hankton and Charlton Warren, didn't get a raise. This is a year-by-year deal. The sense of urgency is every day in that building. I mean, just you get the feel going over there, and we haven't been there for a while because of COVID, but I know Connor knows what I'm talking about. All the guys that have, you know, been on that beat, you know, there's an air in that building. I mean, it's airtight, and there's just no – you just don't sense any sort of relief from that self-imposed pressure. I mean, that's what they come for, right? Georgia knows. They know they're the bridesmaids. They know that Alabama's the team, and they know that, you know, that stuck with them, that they can't beat Alabama. And now they know just how bad the taste of Florida a loss is. They hadn't lost in quite a while. You know, you had to go back a few, 4 years to find a loss to Florida. And now these players know just how bitter and ugly and things can get with Florida fans on their social media and Florida players. So there's a good chip on the shoulder over there. They got humbled a little bit by Cincinnati. I think they all saw their lives, their football lives pass before them in the Peach Bowl. They know they got a lot of work to do. That bowl game, to me, was perfect. I know fans would have rather Georgia won by 4 or 5 touchdowns and just stomp Cincinnati, but this is much, much more effective because there was a lot of guys that got to play that are going to be playing next season, number one. Number two, though, they saw, wow, Cincinnati darn near beat Georgia. They know they better not take anything for granted because the next team up is Clemson. They got a lot more talent than Cincinnati put on the field. So I think that was in the fact that they came from behind. I think that put even more confidence in JT Daniels. Yeah, you can beat Mississippi State, South Carolina, Missouri throwing ahead, but what do you do when you're down 2 scores? And what do you do when you're at your own 20-yard line with 1:28 left and no timeouts? Can you get it done? So I think that game checked a lot of boxes. Some people might say, Mike, it was a snoozer. What are you talking about? I think psychologically, that was an ideal bowl game for Georgia.
I want to shift gears and talk about the Rick Gilbert situation here for a moment. Mike, you've certainly covered over your time as a reporter plenty of coaching searches and coaching hirings, and every athletic director that's ever announced a new coach has all said, this was our first choice. We never offered the job to anybody else. This was always the best option for us. We know that sometimes that's not true, but the athletic directors find a way to kind of spin it that way. That's just the way the college football kind of goes. I think it's sometimes the same thing when it comes to pursuing players. I think it's fairly obvious that Georgia went after Rick Gilbert. Gilbert just wants to be at Florida the same way he just kind of wanted to be at LSU the first time around. I wanted Gilbert at Georgia. I'm a big boy. I don't have to have the media industrial complex spin of why Georgia really didn't want a Rick Gilbert. I don't really need that. I did think that your piece at DogNation.com was interesting, though, about the fact that whether Gilbert had been here or not, the distribution of footballs next year and who gets touches and who gets a time to shine, that's going to be a thing that Georgia has to try to figure out, even without a Rick Gilbert being on the roster. But all that said, if Georgia could have found a way to get Gilbert here, I do think he would have paid big dividends for the program. But, you know, I'm certainly not going to spend a lot of time gnashing teeth over the fact that he chose Florida. It is, however, to me, an interesting situation. For the folks who haven't had a chance to read what you've written at DogNation.com about this, what's your take?
Yeah, well, I mean, listen, Georgia wanted Eric Gilbert. Don't kid yourselves. Of course they wanted him. They recruited him hard, and it wasn't just the coaches recruiting him. It was the players recruiting him. Absolutely, Georgia wanted this guy. Nobody's saying that Georgia didn't want this player. But Georgia could not make the promises that Florida can, and it's not because they didn't want to. It's because of the roster, B.A. I mean, you look at Georgia, and they bring back approximately 95% of their production in the receiving game from the receivers, right? And that's not even taking into account that Dominic Blaylock's coming back, nor is it taking into account that Arian Smith and Darnell Washington are going to grow into primary targets. Even if you take, and I just put this story up just now, okay? The story just went on Dog Nation. It says predicting Georgia passing numbers, receiver catches. You take JT Daniels' final four games of the season last year, which was a pretty good cross-section of games, right? You had a pass-heavy game against State. You had a run-heavy game against Carolina. You had a blowout win against Missouri. And you had a come-from-behind game against Cincinnati. So you had a pretty good variance of games there. And you multiply those games by three, right? And you come up with what does a 12-game season look like. Here's how many passes he throws. Here's how many completions. Here's how many yards. Well, I took it another step. I said, you know what? Kirby's going to throw the ball more. Munkin's going to throw the ball more. I'm going to bump those numbers up 10% and give you a JT Daniels stat line for 2012. Now that I've got that stat line, completions, attempts, yards, let me divide it up amongst the receivers and let me see how it looks. How many catches does George Pickens make? How many for Jermaine? How many for Dominic Blaylock? How many for Arian Smith? How many for Darnell Washington? How many for the running backs? How many for the other tight ends? And suddenly you look at this and say, oh my gosh, there are not enough footballs on this team. Now, if you would have added a Rick Gilbert, oh, of course he'd have been a 40 or 50 catch guy. But 40 or 50 catches, you know, that's only four catches a game. This cat's looking for more. He had seven catches a game at LSU, and he's looking for 7 to 10 targets a game. You go look at this story, and I challenge you. You tell me who you're taking receptions away from. Sneak preview, I got Pickens with 60 catches, right? And I think that's very modest when you look at what he did over the last four games was 23 catches. That would project to 92. I got George with 60. I got Jermaine with 35. I got Dominic with 25. I think these are conservative numbers. And yet, still, I can't make these numbers bigger out of that JT Daniels target share. So where were the numbers? So that's why Georgia could not, when I say Georgia, I don't mean Kirby Smart. I don't mean Todd Munkin. I mean, when you're talking, players talk, and they say, look, what's the situation going to be? Well, the situation is going to be George Pickens is the number one receiver at Georgia. Eric Gilbert knew that. And the situation is going to be that Georgia is going to spread the ball around based on how defenses play you. They are going to throw it to the open man. That's common sense. Okay? So they couldn't tell Eric Gilbert, we're going to get you 7 to 10 targets deep. Now, Florida. Look at Florida. Florida lost more than 50% of their receiving yardage and catches. They lost their top three pass catchers. Kyle Pitts, obviously, right? Grimes and Kadarius Toney. They lost 75% of their touchdown catches. Not to mention Kyle Trask is gone. But the volume that Florida can offer. Oh, yeah. Florida can throw you 7 to 10 targets a game. They can show you what they did with Pitts. That's one advantage. Georgia didn't use a tight end as much last year. Why? Because the tight ends weren't as good last year, number one. But two, they've got a game plan in place. Hey, come play here. Now, here's the question. This is the million-dollar question we'll be talking about. If Gilbert had transferred back to Georgia because of a family issue, I believe he would have been rubber-stamped for a waiver. Because the waiver's back in effect again. It wasn't in effect last year. Remember Greg Sankey said, blanket waiver, everybody transfers, Cade Mays is going to Tennessee, and the Vols were back, right? That's the last time we talked transfer. Now they're saying, oh, no, that waiver is back in effect. Does Gilbert get the waiver to play at Florida, which is 2.5 hours closer to home, but does that So there's still questions about his eligibility at Florida. But getting back to your original question, B.A., that's why. And you can't lie. You can't say, oh, yeah, we're going to give you those targets, and then you don't throw the guy the ball that much. Because then what does Marietta say about that? What does Metro Atlanta say about that? Wow, Georgia really misled this kid. So you've got to be honest in recruiting. And so, yes, Georgia wanted him, Brandon, but the reality of it is for Eric Gilbert, if he wants 7 to 10 catches a game, he's better off at Florida because they can offer that.
But when it comes to 7 to 10, I mean, he did not have 7 catches in a game at LSU. He had 6 twice. He had 5 once. And then the rest of the games were 3, 2, 4, and 4. I'm looking at the game log here from last season for him at LSU. And what my concern would be is not so much him not being a part of the situation, Georgia, because as you said before, you know, Georgia's got some depth. But I think both from an on-field standpoint, assuming for a second that he were to play this year, and I think your point about the waiver is certainly an accurate one. That's going to be, you know, a story worth following, you know, related to that. But you know, if he goes to Florida and Florida does find a way to use him effectively, then it also becomes the kind of thing that kind of validates what Gilbert had said back when he was a recruit, you know, for the class of 2020, that he just believed other places were going to be more able to, you know, to kind of use him effectively. And, you know, frankly, I think from Georgia's standpoint, you want the kind of brand as a program, as a recruiting, you know, machine that says for, you know, elite talent, we're the program that can get the most out of you. We're the program that's going to give you the best, you know, chance to shine, that you come here, we're going to find a way to put you on the platform and, you know, get you the NFL attention you want. This is what Georgia's going to be able to do. You don't want to cede that ground to Florida when it comes to a Rick Gilbert, I don't believe.
No, but at the same time, you want to be able to feature a lot of guys, and you want to have balance. I mean, you know, you're also telling people that you're RBU. You know, one minute you're saying this, and the next minute you're saying RBU, and you know, you can't be everything to everybody.
Sure.
And Georgia's proven that you don't have to have great statistics coming out of Georgia to be a high NFL draft pick. I mean, Riley Ridley had 48 catches, and if he would have ran a better number at the combine, he'd have probably gone in the second round. If he was a better receiver, he could have gone in the first round. Mecole Hardman did quite well, and his numbers were very modest. So it's not always about the numbers, and Kirby said that. He's talked about the quality over quantity. He's talked about the advantages of going through the Georgia practices, just like Saban in his video. You know, when you're going against the best guys in the country every day in practice, you get better. So I understand what you're saying, but the reality of it is in 2021, you just look at those numbers, and there's the 7 to 10 targets a game just is not there on the Georgia roster. Next, now 2022, it's a different story. 2020, and Gilbert's got to be around for 2022 anyway, just to be eligible for the draft. So you could have said, hey, yeah, you come in this year, you know, you're going to be featured. We're going to get you, you know, 3 to 5 average targets per game. But 2022, you're going to be our feature guy. Pickens is gone, for sure. I don't think he's going to pull Zamir White and stick around another year. So there's going to be those opportunities. And the next story is, if I am projecting all these passing numbers and a 10% increase, that means a 10% decrease in carries, Brandon. So who loses carries with Zamir White back and James Cook back and Kendall Milton and Kenny McIntosh healthy and Dejon Edwards thinking that he proved something to you with 14 carries in one game? And, oh, by the way, you signed a pretty good running back at IMG. So that's a crowded foot, not enough footballs on that Georgia offense this year.
Well, Mike, I tell you this. I certainly appreciate you being with us here today on Dog Nation Daily. Very interesting stuff, and I know it's gotten a lot of chatter and attention, so I appreciate your thoughts on what's gone down with the Rick Gilbert. I know you got plenty of other stuff coming up here at DogNation.com. You're also going to be stepping away for a couple of days, some much-earned time off for you. So I wish you well with all of that. Thanks for stopping by and seeing us here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Engineered Solutions of Georgia today. I look forward to talking to you soon.
Appreciate it, Ben.
Take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
Yeah, I mean, for me, the situation on Gilbert kind of comes down to this. It's which Georgia weapon does he actually most closely compare to? And I'm not quite so sure the most apt comparison for Gilbert is Darnell Washington, the guy that has a, you know, similar recruiting profile, plays a similar position, you know, kind of that tight end, flex end type role. I'm not quite so sure the most apt comparison for Gilbert on the Georgia roster is Washington. I'm afraid it might be George Pickens. You know, someone who's really the chance of being an elite weapon, number one primary target in an offense. I think there's a chance that Gilbert, you know, could kind of be that because of just how unique he is. Now, there's also a chance I've kind of always been in the tank for Gilbert, and he ends up not being quite as good as I think that he can be. As we said on yesterday's show, and I'll kind of, you know, put a, you know, ribbon on the Gilbert talk for now by saying this. Mike laid out some very cogent reasons why Gilbert not being at George is not that big of a deal for UGA. But the presence of Gilbert at Florida, I do think could kind of be a big deal. And as said before, you know, for a guy like Gilbert on the recruiting trail, back as a member of the class of 2020, said that he didn't want to go to some program where he's running. Remember the stick routes comment? I don't want to go just run stick routes, which is essentially 5 yards and turn around. I want to be kind of used in a creative, clever way within an offense. And, you know, you certainly, if you're Georgia, want to make sure you maintain that brand. That place where if you are kind of a one-of-one category, unique, you know, football player, that Georgia, as much as anybody, is going to be creative in how it uses you. So the Gilbert saga and how it works out with him at Florida, I do think is going to be pretty interesting to follow here the rest of the way. Let's transition. We'll do our SEC through. And I mentioned before, David Hale's piece at ESPN.com looking at the kind of various tiers for college football. And I slapped my microphone. He kind of put these in tiers for the coming season, right? But I also think that you can kind of look at his tiers for title contention in kind of a long-range view there as well. You know, he does have Georgia, we said before, in that top tier. But Georgia seems to be like the one outlier in that tier in that, you know, Georgia doesn't have the 80% winning percentage during the playoff era, doesn't have the national championship to show for it. So Georgia kind of seems like the outlier there. But looking below that with the rest of the SEC here for a moment, I think it's really interesting that in his tier two of those teams kind of just below the true elite category, in terms of competing for a championship this year, he has both Florida and Texas A&M. And this is an example of, if you're thinking about college football in a tiered system, the SEC in a tiered system, to see Florida and A&M almost side by side, I think accentuates something we've seen on this program a lot. And obviously we're Gator haters and I don't want Florida to be good, but this is one of those things where even going into last season, we said a lot of the hype given towards Dan Mullen as a coach and a lot of the attention given towards Florida as a program building itself up could really be more accurately given to Texas A&M. We said that before last year, and lo and behold, Jimbo Fisher and Texas A&M got the head-to-head win against Florida. And at the end of the season, I don't think anybody could deny, was the better team. Somehow, though, the love for coaching and things like that seems to go the direction of Mullen. And the belief of the program on the ascent, if I'm using that word correctly, would appear to be Florida. But I think it could more accurately be said about Texas A&M. Now, both the Aggies and the Gators are similar in that they are both now looking for new quarterbacks, and the transition there for two guys who think of themselves as kind of quarterback whisperers is going to kind of determine kind of which tier these two programs finish in 2021. But a side-by-side comparison, you know, by the ESPN writer between Florida and A&M kind of puts these two teams in the same category once again. And quietly, I think A&M is exceeding the performance of Dan Mullen in Florida at almost every single turn. Now, you know, Florida plays in an easier division. They won that division this past year because, you know, Georgia had some things to figure out at quarterback and things like that. But if you want to make the comparison between A&M and Florida, as ESPN kind of does here, I think there's more of a case for A&M than sometimes they are given credit for. I kind of incorrectly stated a moment ago that LSU is kind of in that top tier. Obviously, if you're looking at this for the 2021 season, you don't put them there. David Hale from ESPN puts them in tier four, along with LSU, Ole Miss, and Auburn. Now, here, three teams that, you know, you typically don't quite put together in the same category. Obviously, LSU and Auburn would seemingly kind of be there. Their success has somewhat mirrored each other's. Ole Miss is the huge outlier here, which if ESPN is really going to use Ole Miss, Auburn, and LSU in the same sentence, I would suggest it just goes to show you just how undervalued LSU currently is right now. The departure of Rick Gilbert kind of furthers that discussion a little bit more that, oh, LSU is going to fall on hard times. And maybe they have. We saw Gene Chizik and Auburn fall apart after they won a national championship in 2010. Maybe this is an example of that for LSU right here too. But somehow I suspect that's not quite the case. Somehow I suspect that LSU may bounce back this season. And there's obviously, in my opinion, just a chasm of difference between the LSU program, the Ole Miss program, both short-term and long-term. I think it's fairly silly to put those two teams within the same tier or category. The Auburn thing's a little more different. You know, I have been someone that Georgia fans kind of mock me from time to time for being a little higher on Auburn on a year-to-year basis than some people probably wish that I would be, especially some, you know, hardcore Georgia fans. I think for now, I am definitely taking a wait-and-see approach on the Tigers. You know, there was a really interesting graphic that came out the other day of kind of looking at Auburn's recruiting footprint. This was like everybody's recruiting footprint. Like, what states are you getting recruits out of? You know, Auburn has not really done the national recruiting thing very much. They're getting a lot of players from Alabama. They're getting a lot of players from Georgia. They're getting some players from Florida. They're kind of occupying their little corner of the world there. Florida Panhandle, you know, West Georgia, you know, kind of South Alabama. That's kind of, you know, where their guys seem to be coming from right now at a time when the very best players in the very best programs in the SEC are really showing off a national reach. I think the recruiting prowess that Brian Harsin, the new coach, puts on display there is going to be really fascinating to see. Obviously, a big swing and a miss on Gunnar Stockton in the early days of the Harsin administration. But, you know, Auburn can keep pace from a recruiting standpoint. It's very quietly, Auburn recruiting has not been great the last couple of years. That's probably worth paying attention to. One last final thing I'll mention here. When it comes to the various tiers for title contention, as shared by David Hale at ESPN, isn't it interesting to see Kentucky in a tier above Tennessee? He's got Kentucky in a so-called tier five, and he's got Tennessee in a so-called, you know, tier six. And if you want to just really crystallize just how far the Tennessee program has fallen, you know, it used to be that, you know, Kentucky and Tennessee have pretty significant rivalry with each other. You know, Knoxville and Lexington really aren't that far apart. Pretty significant rivalry. Still do have a significant rivalry. And it's kind of been viewed that Kentucky was the little brother in that rivalry. But Mark Stoops has found some recruiting success in Southern Ohio. And, you know, he's kind of built pretty strong lines of scrimmage. They absolutely obliterated, you know, Tennessee on the field, you know, this past season. That there's a little bit of program momentum for Kentucky right now that, unfortunately, if you're Tennessee, you can only be envious of. So that gives you an idea of just exactly what Josh Heupel inherits at the start of his career there at Tennessee, working his way back up to zero, so to speak, and getting on equal footing once again with Kentucky. Good luck with the rest of the SEC after that, but start off trying to at least be as good as the Wildcats. Not a pretty time if you're Tennessee Vols fans. We'll make that your SEC through. So yesterday on the show, we made a remark about the fact that when a Rick Gilbert announced his Florida commitment, he did so from a Family Dollar. And as someone who grew up, you know, kind of going to Family Dollar and you spend a lot of time there, I took it as an absolute act of betrayal that Family Dollar would be the grounds on which Gilbert announced his Florida pledge. So we did something yesterday we never do. I'm morally opposed to free advertising, but yesterday we gave a free plug to the company that I assume was probably Family Dollar's chief competition, Dollar General. And I encouraged folks to kind of go out there and shop at Dollar General. Well, Golden Shoe winner today, let me show you this on the screen here. At least one person, it's Dub on Twitter, HBTF. FD89 says commit to the General, and he shows himself on screen there going to visit Dollar General. I think Dollar General is going to become Dog Nation Daily's meme stock. This is going to be our AMC. We'll take this one to the moon. By the way, Gatorator countdown, 270 days. Dogs beat those lousy stinking Gators. We will see you back here tomorrow on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Engineered Solutions of Georgia.